Gentlemen, good evening. I think the forum is pretty self-explanatory, but I'm going to provide a little color both of why we have it, how we use it, and just a little bit about the process. Before we do, I think it's important, if you kind of look on there, the number one responsibility of every elder is to be a shepherd in his community. I know for many years I didn't really understand what the session did. And then I was a deacon for a while, and then I still kind of viewed the session as these are the decision makers, right? This is their role as a decision maker. I recently been working through a book called The Shepherd Leader. If y'all have seen this book, it's a book on shepherding, and it had a sentence that I underlined twice, dog-eared, and starred in my book, and it said, "If a church leader is called to be a shepherd, those chosen to serve will be different than if it is to be merely a decision maker. Are the elders or leadership team a board of directors making decisions, or is it a team of shepherds caring for the flock?" And it just really struck me that, you know, the primary role, when we listen to Jesus, when we listen to the metaphor of shepherd of the flock, take care of my sheep, that is the primary role. There are secondary roles, and they are oversight and decision making that happens. And so that's some of what this forum is about. But if you, as we kind of get into this, if you say, I'm looking at all these different committees and commissions, I really think my calling is just to be a shepherd over my Sunday school class. That is the last box on the sheet. Okay, so we're all the way down there. We see, I prefer to shepherd my community and continue to serve in the other areas I'm already involved in. All right. So that is certainly an option. And for everyone, whether you serve on a committee or commission, that's still our primary role is to shepherd the flock. So I just want to make that point clear. Okay, so the form, as you'll see here, we ask what Sunday school community you attend. And then very importantly, what ministries are you currently involved in? And so you see them all kind of listed here. I'll give you a little bit of inside baseball. If you are really interested in the worship ministry and you don't sing in the choir, don't do that, have never been involved, and you put that as your number one, you're probably not going to get asked to serve in that, okay? So I think this is kind of a neat opportunity when it reminds you of all the areas of ministry in our church, and you say, man, I really am interested in the Briarwood Fellows, but I've never done anything with it. That's a great opportunity. Maybe that's where we need to start serving and volunteering in the coming year. And then next year, when you go to list your areas of interest, you can put, I've been involved with the Fellows. I love it. I'm going to put them as a number one. Guess what? You might get chosen to be put on that. So, but these are asking for where you're currently serving, what boards you serve on. And then on this back page are all the commissions and committees. And so you see those listed there. And that's going to give you just a great menu. And then at the very bottom, you do put your first choice, second choice, and third choice of where you'd be interested in serving. And, of course, that final box, if you're not interested in serving in any of those, you just want to be a shepherd, that is fine. Check the final box. Just to kind of back up again, it's not a black box about how people get put on to serve on these different committees. Once we get this, once the nominations committee gets this information, they have a meeting, they sit down, and it's really just lining up where people's giftings, interests, and where they're currently serving. So as I mentioned, it's probably a long shot if you put you want to be on the worship team and you've never done anything there. You're probably not going to get placed there. But if you're very involved in a ministry and you put that as a thing, then, you know, that might be an area that, you know, the stars align and people get listed there. I will say another criteria that falls into that is what year you are. So y'all would all be, if you are elected and installed, you have 3 years to serve. But we do this for the existing elders. And so if you're on your third year, you haven't been on that committee, A lot of times you like to have longevity, to have same people to where you have some institutional knowledge that gets passed down from year to year. It doesn't mean the same people serve on every committee every year, but you don't want to have a whole committee where no one has served in there before, right? So I kind of call it, what is it, Bruce, like 4D chess. You know, you got a bunch of little variables, but it all lines up. And this form is very important. So the one thing I would say is don't complain if you don't fill out the form. Okay? It is really an important piece of information. Any questions? Right. If you're elected, you would be in the class of 2026. The current chairman of the nominations committee is Tom Smitherman. If you have any questions, you can certainly ask him about the process, or ask me at another time if you think of something.
Any other questions?
All right. Thank you, Chairman.
Next, chairman of the diaconate, Scott Summers, is going to come up. Also, the vice chairman who I introduced last week, Tim Ayers. Between those two, they can answer any of your questions. But, Scott, if you'll come up now and go over the survey. And then after you finish, Bruce. Okay.
Thank you, Benny. Good evening, gentlemen. Appreciate Zach's information. And it's very similar to what I will speak on, although I'm speaking on behalf of the diaconate. What does a deacon do? First of all, it is a large responsibility, but it is very joyful, and it's for this reason. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. The men on the diaconate serve the Lord Christ. That's what we do. And we serve him by serving the people of his church. And so with this survey, as Benny mentioned, it will be online for the first time, as far as I know, in our history. So we're moving right on here. There are 8 committees on the diaconate. There used to be 9, and we combined one this year for various reasons. But this particular year on the diaconate, we have been about 20 men short. We are prayerfully in hopes that gap will be made up this coming election term, because we had a real good turnout with all of you men. So we're looking forward to that. But the committees are listed. And just what I'll say is we'd like you to put your top 3 choices on the form. They're listed on the back. And, you know, if you are in a position within your workplace or whatever you're involved in, you say, you know, I've got a really great background in the area of finance, then that may very well be your first choice. Or if you say, I do budgeting all the time in my career, then same there. What I will say is on the Lord's Day committee, every single deacon serves on the Lord's Day. So you may be, say, on finance, but you will also serve at least 2 or possibly 3 Sundays on the Lord's Day. But if you are on Lord's Day committee only, then you will likely serve approximately 8 Sundays. And because thankfully we have usually around 120 men, we're able to spread that out across, you know, multiple months. So you don't typically have to serve more than 1 Sunday in any given month, if that makes sense. So the one other thing I would like to mention, well, 2 things. First is, you know, like Zach said, if you don't fill one out, then you're going to be on Lord's Day, because most likely, because we always need Lord's Day help. And that's the most critical time. This is when the most activity is happening. Certainly on a Sunday, people need assistance. We have a lot of things to do. We're responsible for safety and security, and just helping worshipers come in and out of the building. And I love Lord's Day, by the way. Been on it the whole time. Been here a long time. If you say, I want finance, and then budget is number two, and HR is number three, let's say. Well, we, similar to what Zach said, we have to put all the pieces in the right place. So we may have a lot of men who say, I want to be on finance, but you've never, ever served on the diaconate. We probably won't do that. We need some men who've served there before. Some new men who haven't is fine, but not all six or seven of them. So you understand. The only thing I'm asking is for your grace in advance. If you select something and you're like, this is definitely what I want to do, and Tim, who will be doing this next year, says, we need you over here. I just will thank you to understand that. It's not done in any whimsical kind of way. We think about it and pray about it, and we want to put men where they want to serve, but we also have to put men where they're most needed. And so I hope you understand that. The last thing is, there are 42 deacons per class. So if you come in and are elected in this class, 42 of you will be in the class of 2026. But because we have to fill in some gaps, because I mentioned we're short, there are going to be some men, and maybe not even in this room, we don't know yet, who actually only serve 1 or 2 years instead of 3 years. Because any given year of service can only have a maximum of 42 deacons. And that's just based on our church membership. So, does that make sense? Okay. I don't want to take too long. Tim, did I miss anything? I'll be here when it's over, so, and Tim as well. If you have any questions, please come see me. Thank you.
Okay, gentlemen, if you got your book, turn to page 7. It should be the second lesson. Benny, thank you for that introduction. I won't forget it. Okay, gentlemen, tonight's talk is a little bit different than last week, what we talked through last week. I'm not going to use slides, primarily because if you look at page 7 and you can imagine trying to put that on a slide, you have to be 14 years old to be able to read it, okay? So your eyes have to be at their peak to be able to read it up there. But this is how do we organize the church? Now, I know, and just so you know, I know, okay? I know that for some people, this is an exciting topic, okay? And you're like this will be your favorite one, both of you, me and one of y'all, okay? So that'll be your favorite topic. Then for some of you, you couldn't care less how something's organized. I mean, you just want to do your role, get in your thing, and do it. And I understand that. And I understand that's more than those that this is incredibly exciting to. And then the rest of you, the vast majority of you, are somewhere in the middle. And the disadvantage you have right now is you would listen and engage and try to digest it a lot better if you were actually needed it. But when you're sitting right here in the chapel, there's no decision on the table. There's nothing about to happen. There's no, how do I get this thing done, or how does this work? And so you're just kind of sitting here without a real need. And so it can be kind of a challenge to digest. So I'll try to do my best to help it get explained. But the goal tonight isn't necessarily that you could walk out and repeat it. It's just that you'd become more familiar with it. Okay, and if nothing else, you'd become more familiar and know how to frame your question, know how to ask or to frame your question. One of the roles of being the executive pastor that I do is somewhat of an air traffic controller. And so it's, I may not have the answer, I rarely do, but I'm supposed to know how to get the answer or how to direct you or how to find the process and get it. And so we can work our way through that. In Exodus chapter 18, there's a pretty unique interaction that takes place. Moses has been used by God to lead the people out of slavery. And so they have been redeemed. And so now they're out in the wilderness. They're wandering out there. Jethro catches up to them. That's Moses' father-in-law. And so Jethro comes to them, and he kind of watches what Moses does. Moses tells him everything that happened. I mean, you can imagine that's an incredibly exciting story. So he just told him about the parting of the Red Sea and getting released from slavery and all the stuff that happens. And so Jethro watches what Moses does. And it says that Moses sat and judged the people from early morning until the evening. Okay. Now, when you read, he judged the people, the best way to think about that is, so Moses sat, and basically what he did is make decisions, okay? Those wouldn't all be like legal judgments. It wasn't like that from early in the morning till the evening, there were that many people who had violated some part of the law and had to be corrected, although that could have been it. It could have just been a dispute amongst people or a clarification. He goes on to say that he spoke on behalf of the Lord, so they would come to him and not understand what to do, and they would, in our day, you'd get out the Bible and you'd look at it and say, okay, here's the wisdom of the Lord. So Moses, that's part of what Moses would do. And so Jethro looked at him and said, Moses, this thing that you're doing, you know, your father-in-law is probably give you advice too. This thing that you're doing is not good. Okay. And if you keep doing it this way, you're going to wear yourself out and you're going to wear the people out. So it's not just, this is bad for you, Moses, you know, let's get a better structure for you, but it's not going to work for you and it's not going to work for the people. You can't keep up this pace that you're the only person that interacts with the people, makes determinations, helps make decisions, goes to the Word of God, comes up with solutions, etc. That's going to wear yourself out. It's going to wear other people out too. So Jethro says to Moses, you need to break this thing down. Now, the nation of Israel at this time is a lot bigger than Briarwood, but you need to break this thing down by thousands and by hundreds, by 50s and by tens. And so in other words, you need to break it all the way down, and then you need to go select able people. People who love the Lord, people that are seeking to do the right thing. He says they hate a bribe, okay, so they'll be honest in the function of their responsibilities. And then you need to assign them, and it would make sense that there was some intelligence and there was some wisdom in whether or not you assign somebody to be responsible for 10 or whether or not you assign somebody to be responsible for 1,000. So there's a lot of wisdom and there's a lot of insight that Moses would have used to create a structure to lead this nation, this nation of stiff-necked people. And so from an illustration like that, we have tried to put together at Briarwood, and it ebbs and flows and gets tweaked along the way, some structure to where it would not all fall upon the senior pastor to, quote, sit and judge all the people or to sit and make decisions, or everything has to come and to flow through them. And so we create, from a staff standpoint, we create a staff structure, and all of our staff serve as an extension of the senior pastor's ministry. So he has his responsibility, and then they serve as an extension of that. And I think at Briarwood, one of the ways that I tend to look at it, because of the size of our church and the footprint and what God's called us to do, which is a lot. Okay, because of that, I think we have both the opportunity that many churches don't have, but also I think the responsibility that we can and I think should hire specialists in different areas. Okay, so my brother, Andy, is a Baptist pastor. Don't hold that against him. Let me do that. So he's a Baptist pastor up in Tullahoma, Tennessee, and bless his heart, his job description in his church is basically everything. And he's got a couple other guys that are on staff with him and the senior pastor, and basically they just do everything. I mean, they have to be generalists. They don't have a choice. Okay. Now, they may have some specialist interests that they get to focus on sometimes, but they just don't have the ability to spread things like that out or to hire real specialists into the organizational structure. Whereas we do have that opportunity, I think that responsibility, I think it's a privilege to be able to hire specialists. In other words, if we're going to have a pastoral care pastor, why not have a specialist do that? Someone that is gifted in that particular area. If we're going to have a mercy pastor, why not have someone who's a specialist? And instead of just go hire a good guy and then teach him and train him and equip him to do some particular function, then... we would want to hire somebody that God has uniquely gifted as it relates to our staff, our staffing, but also as it relates to our philosophy about officers, what you just heard with these surveys, then we would glean from 1 Corinthians 12, where God tells us that he has made every single believer unique and different, intentionally. Now, God says something that that you have to kind of, it's hard to digest. It's a paradigm shift. One of my mentors used to say, Bruce, you need a paradigm shift. And so it's a paradigm shift of how you look at something. What God says is, I created every single believer different. I intentionally gave them different spiritual gifts. I intentionally gave them different services. Okay? So a spiritual gift, take a spiritual gift, for example, of teaching. A service area, my wife has the gift of teaching. I have the gift of teaching. We are not interchangeable. Okay? Do not send me to a kindergarten classroom. Okay? I will structure them. Okay? So that no one will have fun at all. Parents will hate me. It'll be terrible, and the kids will learn nothing. Okay? And Sonia's not real inclined to be here tonight. Okay? Because y'all don't behave as well as her kindergarten kids behave. So they listen a lot better. But we both have the gift of teaching, but we have a different service. So you take one spiritual gift, and I'll let you figure out if there's a definitive number of spiritual gifts that we actually know of. But you take one spiritual gift. Now, how many service areas would there be? It's not innumerable, but it's huge, okay? So you see now you begin to grow in diversity of every single believer has multiple different spiritual gifts and multiple different service areas that those gifts are going to get applied in. Administration in this area versus administration in this area. And he says you get sovereignly apportioned gifts, sovereignly apportioned services, and sovereignly apportioned effects. Okay, the fruit of, the ramification of. Well, now what God calls you to and kind of what he exposes to us is every person's like a snowflake. Now, don't take that in the way we use snowflake today, okay? But every person's like a snowflake. They're unique to every other person. By intent, God intentionally made every single Christian different for unity. There's your paradigm shift. God intentionally made every single Christian different for unity. That's a challenging concept. You really have to think about that. Because what we would think is, in order to have unity, we need sameness. So we all need to be the same, think the same, conclude the same in order for us to have unity. We think that's a more efficient place to get to unity. God said, no, that's just the opposite. I made you all unique so that when I put you all together, in 1 Corinthians 12 says the family of God, believers are, the church is like a body. One body, many parts. Hands, feet, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, kidneys, lungs, heart, you name it. Internal parts, external parts are both referred to in this passage. He gives us the cautions. Don't let one part of the body say to another part of the body, you should be like me. Don't let one part of the body say to the other body, there's no need for you. Everybody ought to be a foot. We don't need a head. Without a head, what do the feet do? But everybody, God said, I'm going to make you so dependent upon one another in this unique and varied way that I have structured you so that only working together do you function properly. So in order for us to function properly, then we have to work together. Not becoming something we're not, but by understanding, discovering, and growing up into what God actually made us. What is it that he has uniquely gifted and designed and structured us to do? Therefore, whether it be from a staffing standpoint or from a diaconate standpoint or from a session standpoint or even a membership standpoint, but tonight we're just on our leadership structure, from those standpoints, we would not embrace the mentality that any one deacon ought to be able to do any function in the diaconate. Any one elder ought to be able to do any function in the session. Any one staff person ought to be able to do any function in the staff. The best example I could give you of that, and that this would, you'd have to know me at least a little bit, but not much. But if you know me at all, and you would recommend me as a mercy pastor, you can laugh. It's okay, Brandon. You were the first. You're the youngest in the room, and you're the first one to laugh. You know me too well. I've been around you a little bit. Listen, nobody in their right mind is hiring me as a mercy pastor. And by the way, it won't work, because as soon as you did, I'd say, there's no way I'm going to be a mercy pastor. I am called to be merciful. Okay, it's a command of the Lord. And it's an incredible, it takes a lot of intentionality on my part. The only time I've ever scored anything on any spiritual gift test, and I think I've taken 100 of them, I cheated one time. And I got a 1 in mercy. There was a statement, and it said, is this true of you? And it was the most ridiculous, flimsy statement I've ever read in my life. And I went, yeah, that's me. And I got a 1 in mercy, okay? So it's no good to say any staff person ought to be able to do anything. Sometimes you have to do things way out of your gifts, or any deacon, or any elder. But that God has designed us uniquely, and we want to facilitate his design, not determine it, not take advantage of it. We want to facilitate whatever his design is. So as we put our staff structure together on page 7, then basically you see at the very top is the session and then the diaconate. And so we serve under the authority of the session. Okay, so all of our staff serve under the authority of the session. Obviously, we have a senior pastor. That position obviously is open right now. We're in search of an interim pastor. And then at some point, the session will lead us to that process of saying, okay, now it's time to trigger the search for our next senior pastor. We don't know who that is, but we know who knows who that is. And so we have complete confidence in the Lord, in him placing that person in that position. And the uniqueness of that person will have an effect on the rest of the structure. That absolutely will have an effect on that rest of that structure as we begin to build the teams around whoever the Lord leads us to embrace. I serve as the executive pastor of Briarwood, and there are 4 different branches of ministry, and therefore 4 men that I have the opportunity to lead on what's called the executive pastor's leadership team. And those 4 different branches of ministry are the shepherding team, and I'm going from left to right, about 4 boxes down, the shepherding team, the ministry team, the administrative services team, and the missions team. I'll get to the board-directed team in a second and explain that structure to you. But right now, these 4 men serve with me on the executive pastor's leadership team. The shepherding team is made up of our shepherding ministry. So think about all of our congregational communities. Every congregational community has a community pastor. You take a collection of congregational communities, say 4, 5, I think the most we put is 6, and then one person would be over those groups. And so they would have a shepherding pastor that's over them, and those are listed here. We also add to the shepherding team the pastoral care, the mercy, and the counseling. Of course, those are the ministries that we have down in the Altadena house. So working our way down. And let me just say this about Benny. This is an example of where we can hire a specialist. If you look for shepherding pastor in the dictionary, there should be a picture of Benny Youngblood there. He is a shepherding pastor. That is what he did. If he were doing something else, then it would be a huge mistake. And you would say, Benny, you've got to be a shepherding pastor. That's who you are. That's his passion. That's his uniqueness. That's his calling. And he has served faithfully here at Briarwood for 17 years in that capacity. Under him, then we put our different shepherding pastors, and Stephen King has shepherding responsibility over the 4 youngest classes that we have. Okay, so you start, if you were to put all our classes, you know, that little booklet that we put out, and it walks through all the classes and who's teaching them, etc., who leads them. You start with that, those 4 youngest classes that we have of the group. Those are under Stephen. Those young couples classes, those are all under Stephen King. Then the next group that you see the shepherding is Michael Wicklund. He actually has 6. Now, Michael doesn't have any other responsibilities. So with some of them, we give another responsibility like membership or Christian education. But Michael has direct shepherding of the 6 different classes that are under him. Then the Dave Lewis, he has 5 congregational communities, and Dave Matthews has 5 congregational communities. So we spread those across all of them. Benny has 2, even Benny Parks, I think, has 3. And then we get to membership Christian education. This was where Ray Tucker was serving. And so this is an open position right now. We're assessing this position, putting together a search committee to go out and to search for that next person. It's a little bit of a dual responsibility. So he has the responsibility of being the membership pastor, plus he's shepherding over two or three congregational communities, and also he oversees our Christian education committee. Then the Altadena ministries that are also under Benny's leadership are pastoral care. Jim Alexander is our pastoral care pastor, does an excellent job in pastoral care. Mercy Ministry, Chris Thompson, much better mercy pastor than Bruce Stallings could ever possibly be. And Chris has been with us forever. Okay, so we think he was here before Briarwood was started, but he serves very, very faithfully and serves alongside of many of our deacons because of the mercy context. And then the counseling ministry, and it says open down there, but if you've got your pen, we have hired Dr. Greg Norfleet. Dr. Greg Norfleet, N-O-R-F-L-E-E-T. He is coming to us actually from Michigan. But he's been there since about COVID, when COVID hit in Michigan. He spent the bulk of his time in counseling and pastoral ministry in North Carolina. And so we're looking forward to him moving down. He very wisely is moving from Michigan to Birmingham at the 1st of October. That's a wonderful time. So that means he's smart, okay, or at least his wife is, smart enough to come and to move to Birmingham. So Lord willing, he'll be here the 1st of October. So Benny would lead that team, which means think of them not just as individuals, but you put them together in a room, and here's like a body in the body. Okay, so here's a subset body that you put them in the room, and now they can talk about the shepherding needs of the church, from the singles, the young couples, all the way up through to our senior citizens. They can engage. We put the international representatives in there as well. And we can have conversations about the shepherding of our church. What trends do we see? What things do we need to emphasize? How do we need to respond to those? And you have with that, inside of that, obviously critical, the pastoral care, the mercy, counseling, for them all to work together, okay? And like I said, Benny Youngblood does an excellent job leading that team. So any questions about the shepherding team? Uh-huh. Yeah. Norfleet. N-O-R-F-L-E-E-T. I'm sorry. Norfleet. Huh? Yeah. Oh. Yeah, great question. So shepherding is all-encompassing, okay? Pastoral care then becomes kind of the emergency or need-driven response. And so Jim Alexander wouldn't necessarily shepherd somebody for the next 10 years, unless they were in some sort of like a hospice situation or something like that. But he would come in, there's a need. So he comes in and takes care of that need. They're ill. They're struggling with this, that, or the other. They've had a death in the family, whatever it may be. And then he's going to hand them off to their shepherding pastor. Okay. The shepherding is the holistic approach. That's a good question. Yep. Any other questions? Okay. The next branch that you see there is the ministry team, Benny Parks. I will not put him on the spot since he did so well last week remembering everybody that was on his team. But I will say this, he's probably the hardest role. Like, when I feel for him when people say, "What do you do?" And I'm the ministry's pastor, by the way. They're like, "What? Like, what is that? What does that do?" This is... what he does is he leads the team that's your predictable staff team at, say, a 250, 500-member church, okay? Nursery, children, junior high, high school, college, singles, worship, men's ministry, women's ministry, discipleship, evangelism. So those program-type ministries, that's what Benny leads, okay? Benny, he's been in that role for 22 years. He's been here just short of 39 years. and is a blessing, does an excellent job of leading and developing these guys. So the first one you see is Jay Shaw. Now, just a year or two ago, we created this position of family ministry, okay? And these ministries are proactive, okay? So they have a proactive function. So Jay Shaw is proactively going after our families. Under him is the nursery, the children's, the junior high, and the senior high. And so they take care of those specific ministries. And then Jay is trying to focus upon ministry basically to the parents of those, or the whole family in the context, as it would be, but really focusing on the parents in the context of being a parent, okay? And so that's a new development for us. Jay is doing a wonderful job both in leading those ministries that are under him and really moving us forward in terms of thinking for the families of our church, those families of children and students of our church. Then our college pastor is Mark Purser. Mark is an interesting guy. He's a new hire this last year. Mark is a fireman, and so he's part-time with us and then part-time as a fireman. If you've never met Mark, if you see him, you'll be glad he's a fireman. It won't surprise you that he's a fireman. He's a big, husky, strong guy. But Mark just has a deep desire, very impacted by college ministry himself, and a deep desire to minister to college students, along with the female assistant, Jenna, who serves alongside of him. And Mark's just doing a great job. We're excited. Now, this is his first a full fall to be engaged and to do that. So we're excited for him to be able to do that. But, you know, that fireman schedule is pretty unique. It's a few days on and then several days off. And so we're just figuring this out as we work out his schedule. So far, it's been a real blessing. Then singles, Se-young is here, actually. Se-young, would you raise your hand? Se-young Park is our singles pastor, along with Elizabeth Bondurant, who serves with him. Really seen the Lord since Se-young came. When, Se-young? When did you come? Mid-February. And really seen the Lord really create some momentum in that singles ministry. And I'll just say this to you. Now, just in case any of our staff ask if I said their ministry was the hardest one, just say yes, okay? All of their ministries are the hardest one, okay? So now you have integrity. But boy, singles is tough. This is a tough area of ministry, and this is an ever-changing area of ministry. And boy, that's a challenging, challenging arena, and the Lord's really blessing us. And we're grateful to have Se-young with us and the wisdom that he brings to that group and ministers to them. Then you have the discipleship and evangelism ministry, Eric Rebels. He also oversees like our midweek, our Wednesday night dinners, and all the different discipleship ministries that take place, and the evangelism training, et cetera, that takes place in our midweek ministry. And then Christy Herrick leads our women's ministry, does an excellent job, built a wonderful team around her, getting a lot of different women involved in our women's ministry. And of course, you'll look at the offering just now. We're rolling out all that stuff for the fall, and you'll see all the different activity that takes place in the women's ministry. And Christy's really done a great job of developing leadership and growing up and developing leadership, which I think is critical in the church to be able to do that. And then John Haynes is our worship leader. He's a very passive person. He lacks energy. He lacks passion to be able to do. He's an amazing guy. We love having John. Does an excellent job of leading that. He just lives that worship experience and takes it very, very, very seriously. And so we are thrilled to have John on our staff team. One of the great voids. Benny and I do worship planning. Benny Parks and I do worship planning every Monday with John Haynes, and Pastor Reeder would lead us in that. And we should have videoed. There's not hard to figure out who the two passionate people were in the room and who the two stoic people were in the room. I mean, Harry and John had a worship service every Monday as they were planning the worship service, and Benny and I are just kind of like going, you know, it's just us four here, guys, you know. My point is, it's genuine, okay? So it's not fake. It doesn't matter how many people are watching. So that's the ministries team. So any questions about the ministries team? Yeah. Hold on just a second, Mike. There you go. Recruitment. You know, the choir. John leads the choir in recruitment. There's no doubt about that. To pick the hymns? Oh, yeah, the great question. So what we do is, even though we're going through a different pastor in our pulpit now, you know, every week, we get their text and their title and kind of the essence of what they're approaching in that. And we try to get that, you know, before Monday of the week that they're going to preach. And then we build the service around that to the best of our ability. And so we want to create a thematic worship service so that the confession of truth would be appropriately connected into it, the hymns, the songs, etc. We really don't have a checklist. Most people critique worship services by the genre of music or the style of the music, etc. We're trying to say, no, here's the theme of this service. Now, what has God provided over this many years, not this many years, whether it be up here or back here, but over this many years, that would fit? And that we can pull off, you know, that we can actually deliver. And so that's how we approach every worship service. All right. Yes. Yeah, so what we did was we said, okay, from the function to the children, then you've got nursery with a director, children's with a director and a team, and nursery as a team too, junior high director team, and senior high director team. So the function of the children, so that frees Jay up now to deal with common issues, whether he goes down here to the, you know, just having kids group and does an intentional event or ministry, or up here to the parents of high schoolers, or you're about to be an empty nester, you know, type deal, so that he can move back and forth or even take that whole group. And so Benny works with him to try to figure out, how does he spend his time and focus and energy, and what's the delivery system? Is it because of our congregational community structure, some of what Jay would identify and say, hey, we need to address this, we can do in congregational communities because they're life staged. Not everything. You might have a conference, you might have a Sunday night sermon, you might have a just group for them, you know, a seminar type thing for them. So there's a lot of different ways that Jay's but all the more approaching it. Right now, we don't have a senior high director, and so that's the one of those four that we're missing, and that's still pulling Jay too much into that role to make sure that functions. So once we get that, we think we can free him up even more to do that. All right, any other questions on that group of ministry? Okay. The middle section there, our administrative services team, Matt Moore. Matt is just unbelievably gifted, talented, loves the Lord, loves Briarwood, highly, highly committed. All of our team understand that we serve on the shoulders of very, very faithful men that have gone before us, and Matt would be one of the first ones to tell you that. And the way the Lord has just blessed us in the administrative area is really just incredible. So he's been here 22 years in that capacity, serving as the church administrator on his team. So this is your services team. These are your response services team. So Rob Allen is our director of accounting. So he leads the accounting team in that office down in that role, and I believe Rob is doing a very good job. It's always hard for those guys. You know, when you come in as the director of accounting in the middle of a year, you inherit somebody else's stuff, and then you do it, so that year is kind of a wash. And so until you can get your first full year, and so we're really benefiting from his growing in his understanding. He's very gifted, very, very smart in terms of his job. And then the bookstore is run by Debbie Little. Debbie does a great job in the bookstore, especially when so many bookstores are just going out of business. And so she keeps books and information in front of everybody and tries to keep that available for serving our Bible studies and serving different seminary classes, etc. That's a pretty unique but diverse job. Communications, Landon McKee. Landon was a young graphic designer, literally a kid, just graduated college. He was sitting in the, he's a member of the church, and so he was sitting out there in worship one day, and his wife looked in the bulletin, and there was a position open for graphic designer. And she turned to him and said, "Honey, you need to apply for that." And he said, "I'll look at it later." And so she punched him again and said, "No, you need to apply for that." And he said, okay, honey, I will." And she goes, "Landon, you need to apply for that." And he goes, "Honey, I can't do it during church. I mean, we got to listen to the thing." So literally, when church was over, he went and applied on Sunday morning and said, "Hey, you know, be interested in this, et cetera." So we've had Landon since he got out of college. And he was the graphic designer for many years under Dave Balius, if you remember Dave. And so Landon has now, Dave retired. Landon has been elevated up to that position and is just doing a fabulous job. We're very encouraged about Landon and the new opportunities, et cetera, that he would cringe over this being the first time that the, what do you call that thing? The survey being online, because Landon wants it on our app. He wants it on your forehead where you can scan your forehead to be able to do it. So he's way ahead of us. Okay. So, but that's good. Landon's really moving us in a good direction. If you use the app and the website with any regularity, you would have noticed when Landon, when we freed Landon up and said, "Okay, now go after it." You would have noticed that development. Steve Goble has been with us for many years in facilities, and it's a pretty big facility, pretty diverse, gets used a ton, and we flip it and flip it and flip it and flip it. I mean, we just wear rooms out and flip them, and they do a fabulous job of taking care of it, and it's really in good shape. And so as well as taking care of big projects like the roofing thing that we're doing right now, and Steve gives excellent service to that. And then our food services, Sherry. Sherry's been with us for many years, and as the cook and just a faithful employee during COVID, when she had nothing to cook, she was driving us batty because she had nothing to do, and she is a worker. And so we came up with some things for her to do, and she did them very, very well. And so we so appreciate, you know, her not only for just the Wednesday night program, but for events and other things that keep everything moving. And then safety and security, Jason Springfield. If you don't know Jason, I would encourage you to get to know Jason. What a great guy, and what an unbelievable asset to our church. This is one of those that, you know, you did a good hire when you hired Jason. You didn't know you did an outstanding hire when you hired Jason. But he is networked and he is connected. And it's just, we have no idea really just how much he helps us, and the information that he has and that he can get and has access to, and the way that he manages that. And I won't go into just the ever-changing world we're living in and the challenges of safety and security. But one statement, just to keep it as simple as possible, if you ever, ever see anything that is out of, just not normal, just odd, then say something. Say it to a deacon, to hey, tell Jason such and such, anything. Absolutely anything. At Bellevue Baptist Church in Memphis, they were swapping from Sunday school to worship, and everybody's pouring out of Sunday school. It's a big, big church. Everybody's pouring out of Sunday school, and they're walking, going down the stairs to go to the worship center, and one of the guys was walking along, and there was a guy walking the other way. No big deal. Just he was walking the other way, and it caught his attention. Now, he could have left his Bible and anything like that. It caught his attention. And as he turned and looked back, the guy that was walking the other way had a bag. He got to the bottom of the stairs, and he said to one of their deacons that was standing there, "It's probably nothing, but, you know, there's a guy, he was walking the other way, he had a bag." Make a long story short, they have a security officer, he and another guy, just walked up there to say hey to the guy. And when they walked into the classroom that he was in, that bag was full of firearms and ammunition. Solved. Done. End of story. If you see anything. Now, let me say, well, let's take the story and change it. What if it was a guy that really did just forget his Bible and he's got that bag because he's going to go stay with someone after the church. Just so you'll know, you're not going to get embarrassed having told somebody about that. We're not going to tackle them. We're not going to put them, you know, draw our firearms against them. It would have just been a conversation. Hey, did you forget something? Yeah, I got it. Da-da-da. Great. You know, where are you headed? I'm staying with the Joneses. Oh, great. Yeah, have a great day. So it's not, don't think that you're ruining someone's day or you've accused them of something. If you see something seems out of ordinary in any way, shape, or form, then tell somebody. Tell one of the people with the walkie-talkies, get that information to Jason. We have a lot of conversations with a lot of people. There's some interesting people that come to Briarwood, and the vast majority of them are fine. I mean, they're absolutely fine, and they don't know that they got called on. They just know they got real popular all of a sudden, you know. It's like, man, this is a very welcoming church with people who carry firearms. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. So, love Jason, what he's doing. Any questions about the administrative services team?
One question.
Yes. For years and years, there was a filter that Dr. Barker approved every book that went into the bookstore. Yeah, that was for years and years and years. That broadened to, we don't run this up the flagpole because Benny Parks is no Dr. Barker. But we you know, oh, could you hear that, Benny? I'm sorry, I thought I said that quite enough that I can't hear it. And so Benny and we use some other people to filter books that go into the bookstore. So it's we still have a filter. It's just not the same. But it hasn't been for a little while. Okay. Missions team. What? Oh,
several years ago, it seemed like we were approved to have a police department.
Yeah. Seems like that happened, didn't it? Yeah, I read about that somewhere. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I read all 972 articles they sent me. A police department is a technical term. So when you have someone that is connected to ALEA, Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, an individual is a department. Okay, so if you have one, you have a department. The perception of a department, obviously, and you get blistered over it, you know, is, well, where's your jail? Do they have a car? You know, but it's an individual. And so we only have one full-time paid individual. That's Jason. Okay, he's the head of our security. Then we have multiple people that contract in very part-time ways that are all ALEA officers. So it's very important to us that all of our security are ALEA officers for the exact opposite of what we get accused of. They have to answer to all of their ALEA policies and procedures, okay? We could never come up with all that stuff. That's wonderful, okay? So they do answer to that in their behavior here. So they're not independent of that. So that's very important. Thank you. Okay, the missions team, Brian Winterstein. Brian loves missions. I mean, I tell you, to get someone who has such a heart and a passion for missions, truly a specialist in that area, and just been excited to watch him grow and develop and to expand our ministry at Briarwood in missions is just a joy to be able to see. On his team, then you have the national missions and church planting, church revitalization pastor. That's Rob Looper. Rob's doing a great job. Pray for Rob. You know, it's kind of hard when you come and become the church revitalization pastor, and before you're here a full year, that Lord calls that guy home. But we've got some great ideas and strategies and ways to implement that ministry. Obviously, National Missions is a very broad. We're about to have our National Missions Conference here in a couple of months. But that's a very broad ministry outcome or application, and Rob is very gifted in that role, and we're excited to have him on our team. Then the international ministry, Taylor Barnes left this summer in terms of staff, and he's about to leave, or they're about to leave here pretty soon, he and his wife to go to Uganda to serve as missionaries. And so we are searching for someone to serve in our international ministry. But in the meantime, Joel Richards is serving in that capacity. He was our pastoral intern from Westminster Theological Seminary. You've probably heard him preach a time or two on Sunday evenings. Joel and Esty, just wonderful addition. Love having them here and learning from them, and look forward to mobilizing them. Their desire is to plant a church overseas. And so that we did a pastoral intern. We did two, and one of them was to plant a church overseas. So we're still asking the Lord to guide and direct in that endeavor. Our Hispanic pastor position is open. That was Joel Acevedo. He went back to where his family was up in Northern Virginia. They have two daughters and a bunch of grandkids that live up there, and he moved back to the church he actually came from, and there's a search committee searching for a Hispanic congregation. Then the Japanese, Kotaro Hamamatsu, leads that and does a wonderful job. That's a hard ministry, too. It's a very challenging group to minister to, a lot of turnover. In that, and one of the things that you can pray specifically is Japanese women are a lot easier to be able to minister to and to have access to in terms of evangelism and gospel, etc. Men are very, very reserved. They barely let you have a conversation with them. And so pray, most of our ministry to men is when a woman becomes a believer, and then we're able to go through her then to minister to the husband. But many times, the husbands won't come. Their wives will become a believer. They'll bring the children, but the husbands won't come. So that's a constant challenge and hurdle for Ko to work through. And then Sung-hoon Shin is our Korean pastor. Glad to have him. He actually comes from down in South Florida. And so he is getting engaged with the Korean church, and they're building those relationships and bridges back. We had lost a fair number that were participating in our Korean church. We had an interim time of where we didn't have a Korean pastor. That's not easy to just go grab an interim. And so we had lost some of them, but he is. We're starting to see the Lord bring some of them back and other new people to that ministry as well. And then mobilization at the bottom box is what we used to call urban pastor. Okay. The reason we did the change, and you can help us, one, understand it, and two, pass it along to other people. We kept defaulting into these traps of our urban ministry resulted in us just supporting urban ministry in our community, or our person going and doing urban ministry and telling us about it. Okay. Now, that's not wrong. But that's not our vision. Okay, that's not wrong to do. Both of those are valid. And we want to keep doing those two things secondarily or tertiarily. What we want to do is have someone mobilize our members into local ministry. Okay, so that's what this role does, or is our intent for them to do. And Max has already had a couple of opportunities to be able to facilitate that. There's another one coming up that's going to be connected to our National Missions Conference to mobilize our people into local ministries. We have great relationships, great ministry partners, but we need to get our people engaged in those ministries. So that's what Max is called to do. So any questions about the missions team? In order for them to serve in these capacities that are on this sheet, do they have to have been? Is that what you're saying? Right. I say, no, they wouldn't be either one. They might be an ordained elder, but they wouldn't be what we call sessional. They would not be a voting elder. None of our staff, except those that are associate pastors, would be voting elders on the session. So they would not be a deacon or an elder. So none of them would be a part of the 42 deacons or the 25 elders that are serving that capacity. Okay? To the far right, you see the board-directed ministries. These are just, this is kind of a unique blessing at Briarwood. This is part of what the Lord laid on the heart as Briarwood was founded and began to grow. And these board-directed ministries were able to target very unique areas in a holistic way, to literally put together a whole ministry that's going to go out and target a particular group, and the fruit that the Lord has provided has just been amazing. And so we've gone through a structural change in terms of how we organize them and how we lead and manage them. You'll see that from the board-directed ministries team, it says open. That position is being created. That job description is being worked on and created right now. So it's in process as a result of the changes that have been made. And you have a dotted line that goes up to the session. Now, it's a straight line of authority, but they don't report. Each of them don't report directly to the session. So not, in other words, the Ike Reeder does not report directly to the session. That would be a dotted line, and he's going to report to his board chair. Okay, so there'd be a chairman of the board of the seminary, and then that board chair is going to report up to the commission chairman, the board directed ministry team commission chairman, which I'll explain in a minute, and then to the session. Okay, so there's a couple of layers in between these directors and that reporting up to the session. There's eight of them. You see the seminary there. The seminary is the only one that is a separate entity, okay? That was done years ago, basically around accreditation reasons, et cetera. And so the Ike has just done a wonderful job in the seminary. The student count has increased, new programs introduced. It's a real blessing to see and to watch that happen as we talked about last week, an equipping church. And here's the equipping ministry to be able to facilitate those things with them. Then the ballet, Peggy Towns. Let's see here, just a few weeks, the ballet will perform. I think it's October the 1st, Sunday evening, the ballet will perform. But that's a large ministry. You're looking at 300-400 participants in that ministry at all different types of levels. Okay, so do not ask me to describe those different levels. All I know is they're beautiful when they perform and when they honor and glorify the Lord in what they do. Then the Broward Christian School, Gus Martin is our new superintendent. So Gus came, I think it was the very end of July, and started the very next day, hit the ground running, and is working hard because the school has started. And so Gus he's actually from Tasmania. If you haven't, hopefully you had the opportunity to hear him at the Christian Education Convocation. We had him speak for us that night to try to let people get to know him a little bit. Pray for Gus. Education, whoo, boy, education's tough all across our country. It's a challenge in every possible way and requires a whole lot of wisdom and protection from the Lord. Then the Briarwood Fellows, we actually had a year without a director and without fellows. And so now we're about to have our class back. Chad Eskew came to us as a pastoral intern from Westminster. He was with Joel Richards. And Chad is our new fellows director, and he works with having recent college graduates come into a program that spends 9 months training them to have a seamless a life and a world in life view. And so that needs a whole lot of prayer, and we're excited for the fellows to meet them. They'll be coming here, I think, in a week or so. And so we're looking forward to meeting all of them and engaging with them. Campus Outreach, obviously a very large college ministry. Olin Stubbs, the director of our Campus Outreach ministry, and what the Lord has done and continues to do through the Campus Outreach ministry across our country, around the world, is really an honor and a glory to him. Olin serves in that capacity, serves very well, providing really broad leadership. His role has really changed through the years as the breadth of the ministry and the footprint of the ministry has grown and has increased. Christian Medical, oh, you know what? Let me say one thing about Campus Outreach. So when you see different things, you can get confused, and we'll have people like in the National Missions Conference. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody was here from Campus Outreach. But we default to something here at Briarwood. We call Campus Outreach Birmingham Campus Outreach. Okay, that's just, and we can do that, right? We're the parent church, so it was founded here, so we get away with that. But then people will say, oh, I didn't know so-and-so was on that. So just know there are multiple different franchises. Did I see Kirk? Was Kirk here? Kirk Petty? Oh, he did. Todd's here. How many stateside franchises are there? Yeah. Lord's blessed it. So you may hear campus outreach, but it could be campus outreach Augusta, campus outreach Memphis, et cetera, up all the way up to 1416, whatever that number would be. And so know that, you know, as we talk about this, this is campus outreach Birmingham, okay? We just default to say campus outreach. Christian Medical Ministry, Bobby Parks leads that. He has announced his retirement, but been gracious to stay until a new director is hired. And that committee is working hard and prayerfully. The Lord's providing a leader for us in the Christian Medical Ministry. Just Bobby's such a blessing, such a boots on the ground minister. Just does a fabulous job with that ministry. Then Young Business Leaders, Rob Jennin, and under Young Business Leaders, you have the WBL, the Women Business Leaders, as well. And so that ministry has continued to grow and expand and to be able to be very effective and fruitful in our community. Then they also have the second half ministry that they refer to it as. And so that's the focus upon those that second half of their career to do that. And then Quest is our recreation ministry. So Scott Hanna leads the recreation ministry, camp, soccer, trail life, things like that are tucked under that ministry. So any questions about the board of director ministries? There's multiple different ways that you can slice it, okay? If you said, one way would say, well, Bruce, how many people are on the insurance? Now, Matt, at this point, would give you an exact number. Bruce goes over 300, okay? So, and you're probably fine with my answer. But for those of you that want the actual answer, ask Matt, okay? He'll tell you to the person as of yesterday. But that's everybody. Remember, so what I just added in is all of Campus Outreach Birmingham staff, all of the school staff. Those are large, big groups that you're adding to our number. Most of the other ministries don't have that many more multiple staff, but you're right. This is basically our leadership of the staff organizational chart. We have about five different organizational charts that branch out. The last one's a booklet that just has everybody in it. So, yes. Coming in? 12's the target, Ken, this year. Seven coming in this year.
So you said that like a senior pastor had the potential to change the structure. Would an interim pastor make much of a change, or are you going to be holding still?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm presuming, okay, so I don't know who the interim pastor is and don't know who the senior pastor is. And I don't know, I want to be careful, I'm not necessarily sure I'd say they changed the structure. If I said that, they may change the makeup of the structure, okay? In other words, their needs, their strengths, every senior pastor is going to have a bent or do this or his strengths and abilities, et cetera. And so you'll need to ebb and flow with who that. You don't just say, this is who we are, you fit in it. You know what I mean? Not at that level. You might say that to the grounds guy, but you're not going to say that to the senior pastor. So he could change it. As it relates to interim, I wouldn't think so because it is interim, and so you're just trying to get from here to here. But there could be some things that are introduced to help us relinquish a death grip on we have to do it this way, kind of, because an interim might do that and say, hey, you might want to loosen your grip on that, you know, so that you don't impose that on your next pastor. So good question. Other questions? Yeah, so he's going to have a team. Part of his strategy is he's going to have a team, okay? So that team is going to grow, and they'll be a part of creating the events and putting together and which ministry partners are going to connect to. Then he's already done a couple of things with actual classes where a class had a relationship with one of our ministries and said, let's go down to Christian Mission, and we're gonna, as a class, we want to do that, or just throw it out there. you know, and say, like for the one right before the National Missions Conference, it's going to be a, here's what we're doing, come as you desire. And there's going to be multiple things, and you're going to be able to sign up for which one, but they're all going to be going on the same day. So it's kind of a multi, you know, pronged approach to try to get as many people mobilized as possible. All right, any other questions? Good questions. All right, flip the page. And you get to, okay, reporting the session. How do we set up our decision-making processes in terms of how we get information to the session? Well, this structure that you're looking at is designed with a few things in mind to take note of. One is this was worked on back when Pastor Reeder first came to Briarwood and put a group together and a team together that strategically went through and developed a structure. And then you got to figure out how to make it work. And so you tweak it and shape it and mold it as you work your way through it. But basically, it's a commission and committee structure. Okay, if you look at the top, the session has the ultimate authority on what we do. Okay, so decisions, processes, whatever it is, that is the session's responsibility to do that. In order for decisions to be the conscious decision that was made, is decisions are going to get pushed down into committees so that there can be as a focus place where you'll have the most qualified people to be able to deal with whatever those issues are. Let's go all the way back to the very beginning tonight when we talked about 1 Corinthians 12, the body, the hand, the ear, the eye, the foot, etc. You're going to put all the feet together on, call it the Building and Grounds Committee, or you're going to put a bunch of ears together and call them communications, or you're going to put a bunch of hands together and call them finance, okay? So these surveys are very important. The gifting of people, the experiences of people, these are very, very important because we're banking on this, okay? This is not just, oh, we got an idea. We're actually structuring intentionally to have an HR committee of people who know how to do HR, a budget committee of people who have some gift, some experience, some knowledge and input to be able to do the budgeting process. So we've intentionally pushed those decisions down into those committees, but we didn't let them be able to do their work, make their decision, and act on it. There's got to be checks and balances in the system, okay? You push the budget all the way down to a budget committee, okay, of a diaconate budget committee. They work on a budget, and now it works its way back up through the process before it gets up to the session, who would ultimately be the ones that approve the budget. So we're going to go from the bottom of this up to the top, go to the far right bottom. The diaconate has a chairman, a vice chairman, a mercy team chairman, and under that you see what's called the DAT, the Diaconate Administrative Team. There are eight of those committees, the Finance Committee, Mercy, Budget, Lord's Day, Communication, and IT were put together, Stewardship, Ed, Human Resources, and Building and Grounds, okay? So each of those are made up of people, I would say, anywhere from most of them probably 6 to 10, and then there's a couple that are big. Mercy's big, Lord's Day's big, but most of them in that 6, 8 to 10 size of committee, okay? So moving to the left then from the diaconate, go to what's called the ministries team commission. Now, a commission can act on behalf of the session, only given the authority and the scope that the session so determines, okay? So the commission is made up of, there's an elder chairman, a vice chairman, the ministry team staff supervisor, that's Benny, the ministry pastors. Those would be the guys, if you'll go over here to the bottom left, the ministries team, the missions, discipleship, evangelism, worship, families, college, women, singles, the people who report to Benny, they are on that commission. You've got a ministry elder representatives. So for these committees, there are two elder liaisons assigned to every committee. The committee is chaired by a deacon, okay? So the HR committee, Two years ago, Chase chaired the HR committee. Two elder liaisons on the committee, handful of deacons on the committee, and then our church administrator and myself also serve on the HR committee. But Chase chaired it as a deacon. Then you have the elder liaisons who provide that continuity. That's where some of the history comes in, of so that you don't recreate committees every year and you're just have a blank sheet of paper. And they're also the liaison to the interpretation and the communication between the committee and the session, so that they're able to say, Chase might have said as the chairman, what was the session thinking about this? Well, they either know, or we find out, they can go find out the answer, okay? And that's all those committees. They're going to have a deacon chair, two elder liaisons. Those two elder liaisons sit on that ministries team commission, as well as the ministry elders that are connected to those ministries. So all the ministries that are under Benny, they all have an elder assigned to those ministries. So the women's ministry would have an elder assigned to it. The worship ministry would have an elder assigned to it. Now go to the board-directed ministry team commission. You'll see that in the mid, kind of the second from the left box. Once again, elder chairman, vice chairman, the staff person, that's the job we were talking about, is under construction right now. Then the directors, okay, so of each of those eight different ministries, and then each of them have an elder that's either the chairman or the vice chairman of that particular board, and they serve on the board-directed ministries team commission. And you see the ministries listed below you. Now keep going over to the left, and you get the shepherding team commission, elder chairman, vice chairman. Benny Youngblood would be the staff supervisor there. You'd have those shepherding pastors that we listed before. And then each of those shepherding pastors have a corresponding elder that is a representative of those committees. And then these the elder liaison or representative that represent these committees. Okay, so now you've got three commissions: shepherding team, board-directed ministry team, and ministry team, three commissions that meet every other month, okay? And so 1 month, the committees will actually meet. The next month, that the liaisons, the elder liaisons of HR, budget, finance, all those, they go to the ministry team commission, and they present any recommendations that are coming out of their committee. Those elders that make up that commission, they deliberate over it, and then they will either send it back to them, or they can move it forward, and it would go to the leadership team committee. Now, it's very important to understand that the leadership team is a committee and not a commission. What's the difference? Well, a committee cannot act. Okay, so a committee can't say, let's do this, vote on it, and actually do it. Okay, a commission can. Okay, if it's within their scope, okay, a commission can. So what does the leadership team do? Well, the elder chairman of each of the commissions sits on the leadership team, and they bring the recommendations to the leadership team. Leadership team has an elder chairman, an elder vice chairman. The diaconate chairman, vice chairman, and mercy chairman are on there. The senior pastor, the executive pastor, and the church administrator are on there without a vote. Okay, those three do not have a vote on the leadership team committee. Okay. I'll say to you, if the leadership team were a commission, you would have a problem, a potential problem. I'll put it that way. All right. If they could act, then that means that something could come up from one of these other commissions and the leadership team could go, nah, don't want to do it. And it's dead. But they can't do that. I'm going to be real clear here. Okay. Because I hear from people, they've got too much power. They don't have any power. But they can. All they can do, here's the extent of what they could do. Let's say that somebody came up with a ministry idea and it bubbled up through one of the ministries, trying to figure out who to carefully pick on. There's nobody I can carefully pick on. We'll say this. Let's say that our college ministry decided they wanted to do this big event, okay? And so in order to do the big event, they're going to bungee jump off the steeple. Okay, and they think it'll raise all kinds of interest and we'll share the gospel from the steeple. Okay, and so they're I'm kind of getting excited about this. So they set this up and they do it. Let's do it. But to put the crane, it's going to cost $250,000 to rent the crane for the day. Okay, no big deal. But it's a big event. This is great. It's a great idea. You know, why would you ever shoot that down? okay? And so they run this up the flagpole, and it actually makes it through the ministries team commission to the leadership team, which, by the way, it never would. But let's just say it did. The leadership team looks at that and goes, okay, it's not ours to determine whether or not that's a good or bad idea. By the way, it's a bad idea. But it's not ours to determine that. But how are you going to pay for that? We happen to know that the college ministry does not have $250,000 to rent a crane for the day. College ministry said, that's not our problem. You know, that's whatever y'all do. So we would then say, well, it's not the leadership team to determine the money or the source of the money. We would take that and send it either or both to the budget committee and the finance committee. In other words, that decision is not ready for the session to deal with it because it hasn't been fully baked. There might be another committee. You don't let one committee initiate something and force the hand of the other committee. You just send it to the other committee and say, okay, boom. And that just delayed it 2 months. Okay, so it's got to go back through the system. Finance or budget deals with it. Now it comes back to the ministry team commission, to the leadership team, and the finance committee said, let's do it. Well, let's bungee jump from the steeple to the tune of $250,000 and pray that people come to be believers. Guess what? The leadership team cannot say no. They can put it on the agenda. That's what they can do. Okay? They build the agenda of the, because it's been fully baked. There's no, everybody that needs to speak to it has spoken to it, and there it goes. And then we just pray that the session, in their wisdom, would say, let's bungee from something lower without a $250,000 crane, okay? So that they receive the business and they develop the session agenda, okay, that gets sent out. And so we're on a every other month cycle. So the session every other month does shepherding and training, and there's not business, okay? The next month, during that month, while they're just doing that, all these diaconate committees are meeting. And all that information flows, those recommendations flow to the three commissions. And the very next Tuesday is the leadership team meeting. And the very next Tuesday is the session meeting. And then you rinse and repeat. And it just keeps going. Every other month, you're in this decision-making cycle of whatever the decisions are. The standard decisions for the most common things that would come through these commissions for the shepherding team is going to be the membership report. And that's maybe 90% of the time. That's what's coming up through the shepherding team commission. The board-directed ministry team, the most common thing that comes through them is they're going to nominate new board members for the different board-directed ministries multiple times. I mean, not multiple times for each ministry, but every year they're going to be nominating new board members, okay? And so that's going to be a common thing that's going to come up, and they don't all happen at the same time. And so that's a common thing that would come up through the board-directed ministry team commission. And then ministries team commission, the most common thing is the missions distributions. So in their cycle of our global, national, local missions committees meeting and information coming up through there, in their cycle, that's the common thing. But any recommendation could come up through those different commissions. So I know that's a lot, and it'd be better if we actually had a thing to work with. But in terms of general understanding, any questions about that system, that structure that I didn't make crystal clear? Yeah, good question. So there is a nominations committee, and that nominations committee goes through a process of collecting names. And so every year, so in any year, typically you're selecting the vice chairman to serve as the chairman the next year. Okay, so you're probably just endorsing last year's vice chairman becoming the chairman, and you're identifying a person to serve in that. And that's part of what the nominations does. They take this many names, and you begin to whittle it out. I think Zach was describing this. It's a matrix to figure out who's available, et cetera, and then they just vote on who. You'll end up with usually two or three names. You start with 12, 15. You'll end up with two or three because what will happen is you'll say, well, I think John Smith would be a great vice chairman of the leadership team, okay? Well, John Smith is the only active elder on the ballet board. The only one. Therefore, John Smith is going to be the liaison representative to the ballet. Or John Smith put down on his chart that he wanted to be the liaison to finance. He's the president of a bank. That's his bailiwick. We'll talk to about that and might keep him there in that particular place where he served for X number of years, et cetera. So it's the nominations committee's function to do that. That's not an easy process. But it's a matrix that you got to put together of a whole bunch of names to try to build. Now, this will be the seventh endorsement of the form. Please, please, please fill out the form and let us know interest. Other questions? There are other standing committees, the discipline committee. I won't be able to remember them all, but there's a discipline committee. There's a senior pastor review committee. There's safety and security committee. Thank you. Benny, what? Wedding. That's one you should all sign up for. The cush job here is to be the wedding coordinator elder. Take my word for it. That's what you want right there, okay? I just shot that. Benny, no one is going to sign up. If you did sign up, I think you'd be the first person in the history of Broward to sign up for that. We draw straws on that one. So that's all you got to do is tell the women they can't do the flowers that way, you know? That's all. That's all you have to do. And you won't do it twice. That we don't even know where the last guy is that had that job. Okay, flip over to the decision tree, next page. We've already covered this, okay? This is just a diagram to help point out a couple of things, and we're almost done. the decision tree, source of a recommendation. If you note anything, basically, see all those things listed there, what the source of recommendation is? It's anybody. Okay, a source of recommendation can be anybody. The hard part's getting it to the right place. Okay, so what you got a recommendation, where does that go? Who do you go recommend that to or get that group to recommend, whether it be a staff team does it, a board, a ministry team, an individual, whatever it may be. So that can be varied. There is no limitation on where a recommendation could actually come from, but we are going to funnel it to a diaconate committee. Okay, we're going to send it, whatever it is, we're going to put it into our process, okay? And we're going to send it to a diaconate committee, and they're going to look at it, deal with it, work with it, et cetera, to try to figure out what to do with it. Then, as we talked about on the page before, it's going to go through one of the commissions, okay? Get refined, et cetera, and then on to the leadership team, and then they'll make sure that it's ready for the session to deal with, and then on to the session. One of the benefits, and I'm not going to suggest to you that every aspect of this structure is beneficial because there are layers, but it's by intent, but it can be laborious at times, and that's okay. But one of the benefits to this is I get the opportunity to sit at different levels of this, and I will hear the same thing talked about three or four times. And I get to, by the time I'm sitting in the session meeting and hear it laid out, it's the best version of itself. So if you heard it, you know, 2 months earlier when it was just an idea and it had a whole bunch of entangled things connected to it, it really wasn't that great of an idea. But then you put it into a committee and 8, 10, 12 people who know what they're talking about in that area got their hands on it and worked on it. Then you put it to the commission and they spoke to it. They worked on it. Then it goes up to the leadership team committee. And even the ability of the person to explain it, you know, sometimes you get to the leadership team and the person explaining it gets about halfway through and goes, I don't know, guys. I don't understand it. Because they weren't on the committee that did it. And so we go, okay, this one needs some explanation. Okay, great. And so that helps us get it to the session in a way that we can put the information in front of them. We do that the Thursday before the session meeting, and they're able to vote on it. Okay? If you look at the very bottom sentence, on the decision tree, it says the session's operating guidelines describe the process for reviewing and acting upon reports and recommendations received from commissions, committees, and board-directed ministries. So if you are elected to the session, if you've already been on the session, you would have a copy of the session operational guidelines. If you get elected to the session, we'll give you a copy. But it does, in the document, goes through the different commissions, and there's this note. Commissions, as outlined in the Book of Church Order, have authority to act on behalf of the session. This should be done on routine matters in order to expedite the process, as well as push decisions down to those who have a greater degree of understanding of the issues. It's the responsibility of the commission, guided by the chairman, to reserve final decisions for the session on matters that are deemed important or unusual enough to rise to the session floor, including any significant decisions that could be communicated in a public forum. All actions taken by commissions will be reported to the session. Any action taken by a commission can be changed by a majority vote of the session. Okay? The session has the ultimate authority and the ultimate responsibility. Therefore, when our missions committee approves $500,000 of missions distributions on a Tuesday, 2 weeks before the session meeting, we don't cut checks. Because that's very hard to undo, right? So that would be basically saying to the session, we acted, but you can't undo that. I mean, you could, but well, that would be terrible to go ask the money back from those people. So we sit on those. We wait for the session to act. Once the session acts, then you release those. That's the responsibility of the chairman to make sure that that happens. Also, in the session operational guidelines, based upon the system that we have, as you can tell, something goes through the system, you're looking at somewhere 40, 50, 60 people who've actually seen it, talked about it, discussed it by the time it gets there. It says response to sessional decisions. God leads the session through godly men who are chosen to serve as shepherds of his church. When given adequate information and opportunity to discuss the issues, the vote should settle the issue as we consider that God's will. That's not a trite statement. Anytime we say that we consider something God's will, you should underline that, okay? So when the session acts, we consider that to be the will of the Lord. This does not prevent a brother from objecting to the vote if he feels it's in opposition to Scripture. Now, notice that's not to his preference. It's an opposition to Scripture. As elders, we must work hard to be sure that our objection is based on principle and not preference, and to assume that those who vote differently from us are being prudent and not sinful in their action. It speaks of mutual subjection. We should be in subjection to one another as discussed above, based on Ephesians 5:21. Unless the brothers of the session have voted in violation of Scripture, we are obligated under God's word and our ordination oath to support that decision. In supporting the decision, it is implied that we are to come alongside the brothers who voted in favor of the issue and work for its success. So we voted against it. We didn't like it. We lost. What do we do after that? We come alongside those that voted for it. And not just that, but we work for its success. In no instance is a brother's work to undercut the action of the session. Silence is not as good as support, but it is not as destructive as is murmuring. If a brother finds himself in opposition to a sessional issue, he is to object in a manner that does not hinder the peace and purity of the church. An officer may request that his objection be recorded in the minutes. The objection should take place in the prescribed manner with the pure intent of bringing the issue back to the session for reconsideration. If a brother speaks to or writes to other members of the session, it should be again only for the purpose of bringing the issue back to the before the session in a timely manner. Continuing opposition groups are destructive to the unity and the peace of the leadership and membership. We have created a system, and we've used it, 1 Corinthians 12 as our guide for that, recognizing that God made us as a knee, and the hands have decided something. And that's okay. The knees can still not like what the hands said right up until the body, the session, makes a decision on it. Then the knees support whatever that session did. But by the way, so do the hands. So we have that one voice mentality and approach as we consider that to be the will of the Lord. That's why that's such a powerful powerful statement. If you'd like a copy of the session operational guidelines, then just see Benny and he'll get you one. Okay? Any questions about any of that? And if you have like specific questions, I'll remain up here. An action that a session commission could take, and then it goes on. So when you join the church, then the session commission can meets. It's a commission that actually meets, and they hear the testimonies and they vote on those people. Okay, then we present them to the church, and then the minutes of that just get reported to the session. So the new members don't come before the session as a body. We've given that authority to an elder commission to be able to do it. So when you see them stand up on the stage, that may not have gotten to the session yet as a report. Okay. So, but they can act on that. All right. Good question. Any other questions? Once, twice. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I do thank you for this, your church. Lord, thank you for the wisdom that you have given to those who have come before us. Lord, I pray that you would allow us to work, to act, to decide, to lead, to serve in a way that honors and glorifies you. Lord, thank you for this structure. And we recognize, Lord, this is not by any stretch of the imagination a perfect structure, Lord, but it's what you've unified us around. And so I pray that we would be true to it and we would work for its success and we would be unified in it. I do thank you, Lord, that you have created us unique, that we would be unified and be a reflection of your diversity, be a reflection of your uniqueness, Lord, and we would be dependent upon our brothers. And I pray that in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.